Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is a very snowy, snowstormy Monday morning, January the 17th, 2022. And I continue with who has become my Monday morning guest and talk show host partner here, Jimmy Saxton in Dubai, who apparently does not have a snowy morning. One, because there's no snow, and two, because it's not morning there.
Well, but we have had a lot of rain recently, which Dubai is not built for. And so, you know, there's lots of leaky things and flooding in the road, but it's been kind of nice to have. It was actually yesterday is Sunday. And I don't know if you know this, but we used to be on a Sunday to Thursday work week here. And Fridays were off, and they now, as of the first of the year, we're on the regular Western work week, so Monday through Friday, so we get Sundays off now. And yesterday was really a beautifully gloomy Sunday. It was, you know, overcast and rainy and just a perfect day for sitting on the couch and not doing anything.
Yeah, actually, I did know about that change in Dubai. You are the second person told me about that. That's interesting. So, obviously this sort of awareness of integration with the rest of the world puts pressure for some kind of common pause days, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to modernize normalize with the rest of the world in terms of the work week. It's certainly, I don't think for most of the expats that deal internationally here, I don't think it really changes a lot, because we always kind of work Sunday through Friday anyway, because Friday in Europe and the United States is still a business day. So we'd all wind up working Friday anyway with those marks, get Saturday off. And then Sunday we'd kick off here again. So Saturday was really the only day off. It's still kind of the same, because, you know, most of us that work here have clients in other Middle Eastern countries, which are still on Sunday to Thursday. So you see a lot of people are still working Sundays to accommodate clients in those jurisdictions. But
interesting. Well, you know, we were going to continue our discussion of the Charles Adams book today, but you know, prior to that, we got started on a really, really interesting conversation. I mean, probably the most topical topic in the world today is the COVID-19 stuff. And today, let's explore a little bit about the effect that the COVID-19 pandemic has had on the demand for second citizenship, second residences, all that kind of stuff. I mean, you had some very interesting comments before we hit the record button. So how has the pandemic impacted the demand for second citizenship residences and stuff like that? What's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, look, I think it's put it into hyperspeed. I mean, I think, obviously, if I see the demand with second, I'm not even going to say second residencies. I'm just going to say a move of residencies. But I think what I've seen is it's basically placed it into hyperspeed, right? I mean, I think there was when the pen, at least in my business, like I've just never been so busy with people trying to protect their wealth and get it out of these confiscatory tax regimes in my entire life. And everybody that I talk to that's in the same business that I am says the exact same thing. Like, it's just, everything's in hyperspeed. I mean, obviously, in order to really have any tax savings as an American, you do need second citizenship because of the citizenship-based taxation. You got to expatriate. But for the most of the rest of the world, especially people from other high-tax countries, mostly in Europe and in Canada, Australia, you know, they have the ability to move and set up shop somewhere else, because they don't have citizenship-based taxation. What they really need is to change residencies. But I think what we're seeing is it's really a change of residence, right? I mean, it doesn't help you to live in Canada, for example, and have a second residence in Dubai. You have to cease the tax residency in Canada and become a tax resident of somewhere like Dubai, and move your liquid wealth here and all that kind of stuff. But there's just a lot of activity in this space that is basically, you're seeing a lot of high net worth individuals and family offices that are moving to tax advantage jurisdictions. And then a lot of them still have legacy assets or pleasure assets, like vacation homes and yachts and stuff like this, located in high tax countries. And it's how do you bring those into a holding structure, some type of structure that's at least going to minimize the tax consequences of having those assets in those countries. But one thing's for certain is I think this is the straw that's broke the camel's back. I think that there was a lot of people that kept, you know, a lot of clients of mine and people, friends, you know, for years were kind of saying, oh, you know I should get out of this country. I should move because of the taxes. And I would, you know, I'd tell them what's coming down the road. And I think that the pandemic and just you really seen that. You didn't think you'd get more aggressive. The tax authorities have become even more aggressive, right? The new tax legislation and everything. It's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, I think it was around 2018 or maybe 2019, I gave a presentation to an organization in Europe. And I think I called it, in the 21st century, the most interesting thing about a person is his or her tax residency, right? So, you know, the last century, you know, a cocktail party, people talk about their new car, they talk about where their kids went to college. 21st century, they talk about, you know, what government's abusing them and how they're going to require a different tax residency. And I think that has definitely come to pass. And I have talked to, in Canada, which, you know, is, I would say, one of the more brutal tax regimes in the world. You know, I've talked to a number of people. And you talk about, you mentioned the people who already are wealthy. I agree with you on that, but I'm seeing much more urgency from the people who are not wealthy and want to protect their ability to become wealthy.
It's a very good point. Well, I mean, look, I think I agree with you. I do see, especially given that, I mean, because the other thing the pandemic has really kind of done is, from one side, it sort of reduced mobility because, well, it made travel more difficult, right? So a lot of leisure travel became difficult and people didn't do it. But in another sense, it really increased mobility, right? Because everybody started working from home. Everybody started doing remote work, and doing video calls and stuff became far more acceptable. I mean, to be quite honest, I do video calls with other clients in Dubai sometimes because they don't like driving across town. That never would have happened before the pandemic. And so what I've seen is a lot of people who were just self-employed have become digital nomads, right? They've left wherever they were living. Dubai, for example, the UAE now has sort of freelancer visas. I know there's several countries in the Caribbean where you can now set up like a freelancer visa relatively cheap and become a tax resident there. I think for like, I forget, but it's under $5,000. I think it might even be under $2,500.
You become not become a tax resident there, or not.
Well, you can become a tax resident of one of these countries in the Caribbean that just doesn't have income taxes, right? Like, so I think a lot of those countries have done that. So you've definitely seen this sort of, because of the acceptableness of remote work, you've seen a lot more people take this opportunity to move and work somewhere else because they don't need to be in an office. right? And they can do that. And so I would agree with you that I think there's a much lower level of people of a lower level of wealth are also seeing the opportunities and taking advantage of them.
Well, I think they certainly are. And, you know, part of the focus now has become, you know, how to effectively sever tax residency with place. And, you know, of course, we both know that from the U.S. perspective, the only way to sever tax residency is to renounce U.S. citizenship.
Yep.
And, you know, as you know, well, I guess both of us have been sort of in this expatriation space for many, many years. But what I've noticed over the last few years, I'd be interested to know if that's your view as well, is that, you know, for a long time, the people expatriating were primarily, Americans abroad. You know, there wasn't this huge mass of people living in the United States who all of a sudden had an interest in expatriation. And I am finding a lot more interest from people who, in fact, do live in the United States, you know, with the whole notion of expatriation. Are you finding that as well?
Somewhat. I'm going to kind of categorize a little bit between born Americans and naturalized Americans. I'm not seeing a huge uptick, at least out of my business, in born Americans, but I am in naturalized Americans and people wanting to give up green cards. So I think there's been, I've seen definitely an increase in interest for people that originally came from somewhere else and got green cards, some who eventually obtained citizenship in the United States, and now they're in a position where they don't need to be in the United States anymore. And they're looking at it like now's the time to get out.
Well, certainly it includes that group as well. No doubt about it. And these are people who have a consciousness or a memory of, you know, a different kind of life. I mean, a life that isn't so totally regulated and, you know, driven by taxation and that sort of thing. But the, you know, that 2 million barrier is really significant. And a lot of these, you know, what I call the not wealthy, but want to preserve their ability to ever get wealthy. You know, that group of people are A, not becoming Americans, and B, you know, working on how to abandon that green card.
Well, and the other thing that I would add in terms of Americans, I mean, one of the things that I've seen, and especially by more sort of comments from people that I've seen online, and also from, you know, people that I've met at somewhere, you know, at some sort of a social gathering or something, you're seeing a lot in my opinion, obtaining a second citizenship for an American has become something to aspire to, right? Like you're seeing it, like it is a goal of people in their 30s, early in professional careers that are working on building wealth, that is before buying a house, before buying anything else, that is what they're working for, is to be able to afford a second citizenship so that they can get out of the US eventually if they want to. And that's something that I think is kind of new, right? I think normally it's been more higher net worth individuals. But now that, you know, I mean, I think there's some citizenships you can get for like under 200 grand.
There are.
That's certainly, and that's something very attainable for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's also very likely to, you know, fuel a lot more interest in Mexico. I mean, it's relatively easy for, you know, people to get permanent residence in Mexico and that sort of stuff. But I agree with you. It's as though, you know, maybe we could say a second citizenship, a second residence, or the way I see it is more to lock in the right to cease to be an American is becoming a cornerstone of financial planning for people. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that for sure. That, you know, to become to get rid of the U.S. citizenship is definitely something that a lot of people want to do, or at least want to have the option to do. And I think even for people who aren't American and aren't ready to maybe make the move yet, you're seeing more and more people establish second residencies, you know, mostly people from Europe establish second residencies so that, you know, when the time comes, they can get out. And one of the things that we're seeing a lot in happen in Europe is, you know, a lot of EU countries have exit taxes. So a lot of people in the EU, but because of freedom of movement under the EU contract, you can't charge an exit tax if somebody moves to another EU country. Right. So a lot of people are leaving, you know, an EU country with an exit tax for another EU country that does not have an exit tax, and sort of staying there resident for a little while and then completely leaving the EU in order to avoid that exit tax. I mean, you hear of a lot of people doing that these days.
Yeah. The proliferation of exit taxes is growing and growing and growing. You know, every year it seems as though more countries are adding these things. I mean, I think this actually started in Canada, embarrassed to say, and I think the mid-90s, so Canada has, and there's nothing quite like the U.S. exit tax, at least as it applies to Americans abroad, but Canada has exit taxes. And I have talked to a lot of people. In fact, I've done a couple of podcasts on this topic that more and more people are seeing the payment of exit taxes as just a financial investment, to preserve their ability to, generate wealth or even a decent standard of living somewhere else. And what's interesting is that the earlier they get out, the less exit tax they're going to pay, right?
Yeah. Well, the lower your wealth, right, the easier, the less the exit tax is going to be, which normally is the earlier the better, right? The thing, just from a morality standpoint, it's so screwed up, right, in these countries. You're born into this country, whether you're American or you're Canadian, especially if you're American because of citizenship-based taxation, but you're born into this country and essentially become a party to this tax system that you never really agreed to be a party to. And then when you try to exit the contract, there's a penalty for it. You know, I mean, just from a moral standpoint, it's just really offensive.
Oh, I think it's extremely offensive. And, you know, we're not talking about Charles Adams today, but the shadow of Charles Adams is always there, because as goes morality, so goes taxation, as goes civilization, etc.
You know, what's so interesting about the Charles Adams book is, as I've read it, is he articulates my feelings on taxation and even, you know, refines my thoughts about them even better. Like, as I've read this book, all I think to myself is, this is what I've been saying, like, you know, the whole time. But for me, it's mostly been just sort of my own analysis of the tax system, my own emotions about it. But he actually put, you know, some really sound reasoning and historical facts behind it, which is just tremendous. I mean, I'm not a religious person, but the book has become my Bible.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. So, you know, what this pandemic has done is, I think, sort of accelerated
accelerated people's thinking about these problems. And, you know, they look around at these authoritarian governments. You know, for example, I mean, speaking about Canada for a minute, which I think represents a lot of these first world democracies. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at what's happening with the COVID thing. We have a province like Quebec, you know, that is making, I don't know whether they'll really do this, but are making noises about trying to impose separate taxes on unvaccinated people.
I saw that.
I mean, you know, this is amazing stuff, right? And it definitely gets people thinking about leaving countries. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I've talked to a number of people who are very nervous in Canada because of the, you know, the authoritarian tendencies of the Trudeau government and are beginning to consider, you know, leaving for that reason as well. And then you get into the whole discussion of exit taxes and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I mean, we definitely live in interesting times.
And I think as more and more people, as more and more residency options, especially for non-US citizens who only need to change residency rather than citizenship, as more and more tax-advantaged residency programs become available, and the more and more people are mobile and able to work remotely, I think that that opens up the ability to leave and get out of the tax net to a whole other demographic of people. And I think as that happens, we're going to see these exit taxes, you know, the sooner you get out, the better it's going to be. Like waiting is not going to yield a better result.
No, it's not, because A, you've got, you know, sort of natural increase in wealth, you know, if nothing else due to inflation, but you've also got very, very clearly the writing is on the wall. They're going to be, I think, massive tax increases, not overnight.
Yep.
But there's going to be massive tax increase. I mean, you know, on a mundane level, you know, at this time of year, the property tax bills are coming out for the city of Toronto where I live. And, you know, I don't know. It's an unusually high property tax, you know, because of the, you know, the expenses. I mean, I get that. Okay. But yeah. I mean, that's an example of where all of these things are going. You know, the city of Toronto is just part of the country as a whole. And, you know, it's the same problem. So, you know, a lot of people, I think, just recognizing that things like capital gains tax are going up or just seeing departure tax as just a prepayment at a lower rate.
And one of the things that I thought was really, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting, and you'll enjoy this. I had a client of mine forward me a YouTube video from this guy. I don't remember what his name was, but he has this YouTube channel. And basically, what he does is he's basically, I mean, he doesn't seem to be any kind of tax expert or have any sort of real formal education or experience in this. It just seems like he kind of researched this himself and figured out how to do it. But he's a young guy. He looks like he's probably in his 20s. And he's basically telling everybody with crypto, like, hey, listen, like, if you have this crypto, move to Dubai, become a resident, and then just sell it. And not pay any of the capital gains tax. And I thought, I mean, listen, the guy made a good video, but I just thought it, and I mean, that strategy really applies to any tax advantage jurisdiction if you're not American, right? Just leave wherever you're at. You know, I mean, obviously you need to be mindful of the exit taxes if the country has any, and that might impact the viability of the strategy. But otherwise, for the vast majority, people who aren't Americans and don't live in a country with exit taxes, don't have an exit tax, sell your crypto, and then, you know, either keep it, live off of savings, or, you know, put it into some type of foundation or something in that country where you can kind of continue to keep it out of the tax net of wherever you want to go be a resident of. But I just thought it really interesting that it's reached the masses to this point, right? It's this concerning.
Well, it has reached the masses. You know, they basically, the whole concept of changing tax residency and doing one of, and you know, that can have one of two effects, right? Which is quite interesting. One is, okay, if you change tax residency, you're probably going to get a bump up in the basis of the assets for the countries that will, you know, use a fair market value approach. And that means the whole level of accretion in wealth can avoid taxation. But the second is that, you know, for countries that don't have capital gains taxes, you know, it can escape it altogether. And this is, I mean, this is very interesting stuff. I mean, I've actually had inquiries from people about this in the context of green card holders wanting to use a tax treaty tie break, a provision. You know, it's the same kind of thing. But I agree with you that there's definitely a heightened consciousness of this kind of stuff. And I mean, doesn't that tell you that, you know, the taxes in these first world democracies have just reached the point where people are not willing to pay them?
No, I mean, look, it's really interesting when you read like Charles Adams's book, but you know, I mean, he basically, and I'm obviously not encouraging anybody to break the law, but it's just interesting that he writes that, listen, when taxes reach a certain point, like evasion is justified. and also what I thought is so eloquently put by him is that, you know, tax evasion, you know, they make you talk about paying your fair share and so on and so forth. But he says, listen, like, it's not a breaking of a natural law like murder or something, right? It's a made up law. Like,
well, he calls
the only person that's felonies. Yeah, synthetic felony. It's a great name for it, right? So
yeah,
and I think that that's very, again, I'm not encouraging anybody to break the law, but I think it's very interesting that, you know, the governments have tried to really make the tax issue a moral issue, that if you know you're not paying, you're not do this, that you're sort of the morally corrupt one, when in reality, you know, these guys are the ones trying to extort you.
Well, you know, on that point, I mean, this wasn't our precise topic today, but we seem to have, you know, naturally evolved into lesson 9 in the great Charles Adams book. So I mean, my God, we got there without even trying. So here it is, Jimmy. So 9, consent is required for all lawful taxation, whether by longstanding custom or by the common consent of the taxpayer. When a state taxes without bona fide consent, regardless of the equities or reasonableness of the tax, rebellion and civil disobedience are justified. Now, I think that this severing tax residency and moving to other countries is in fact the 21st century form of rebellion and civil disobedience.
Well, I would agree with you. And I mean, this, the same thing happened to the Roman Empire, right? Everybody that was paying taxes left.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the main reasons that it failed was because everybody that worked for the government was on welfare. And where we're headed now.
Well, think about it. I mean, so he wrote that in the early 1990s when there were no departure taxes, when, you know, there was no consciousness of second citizenships and residencies and, you know, crypto. And I mean, you know, nobody thought about this stuff because the world was very, very different. But, you know, so we apply his thinking in 2022. Consent is required for all forms of lawful taxation. You know, these people we're talking about really find it offensive and are not consenting, either by longstanding custom or by the common consent of the taxpayer. When a state taxes without bona fide consent, regardless of the equities or reasonableness of the tax, rebellion and civil disobedience are justified in 2022. That means second tax residencies. It means severing tax residents. I mean, it's amazing that without even trying, today we managed to cover Charles Adams' lesson 9.
Yep. And you know what would be interesting to look at some point, right, is how long it's, you know, you said you wrote this in the early 90s. We're now 30 years later. You know, if we compare that time frame to like the collapse of Rome and the collapse of other great democracies, like where are we on the timeline until things really implode is what I find interesting, right? Like if we look at how far we've gone in the last 30 years from where things were at when you know, he wrote that book to where we are today. Because I agree with you, it's the people are rebelling with their feet, right? They're leaving.
Yeah, absolutely, no question about it. I mean, most people are not inclined to, what do sit-ins or something, complaining about tax. I mean, that's, you know, no, everybody knows that's not going to be effective. I mean, I think people just realize completely out of control. The only thing they can do is leave, and that's it. They're leaving.
Yep. And, you know, I've often, in a lot of my blogs and often in our conversations, and he even talks about it in his book, is that I think this is what makes the Swiss system of democracy work. Is that all of the taxes have to be approved by a vote of every citizen.
Well,
so you truly have occasions with citizens, but I think this is how you truly get consent, right? And that's why
you need citizen engagement. And this is another contextual problem of the whole thing, is that basically politics in Canada, the United States, is run by the political parties, and the political parties exist to benefit, you know, the elite members of the parties, business interests, etc. And unfortunately, and this is coming from, as you know, Jimmy, I'm a fairly right-wing conservative by disposition. But I mean, you know, even I would agree that the average person on the street has no representation in the political process. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, look, I think nobody's ever going to be as careful with your money as you, right? And so when you hand over the spending of your money to somebody other than yourself, they're going to be looser with the purse strings. And I mean, this is exactly what we've seen with, you know, these representative democracies in most of the, you know, wealthy countries of the world, is the citizens have handed over, the spending power to their representatives in government, who are wasteful. And they don't have any, you know, real consequence when they make a mistake. They just go back to Mr. Taxpayer for more money.
And they usually get reelected.
Yeah, no, because they're great salesmen.
That's the amazing thing about it. All right. Well, this has been a great inadvertent foray into lesson 9 today. Just shows you the wisdom of the book and the principles. And probably time to call this one quits for today. This has been great. Any closing thoughts, comments? Why don't you get your coordinates in? How do people get more Jimmy Sexton wisdom?
Well, look, I think my closing comments would be more in the form of a warning, right? The time to protect your assets and your wealth and yourself is now. The situation is not going to get better in the Western world with these high tax countries, and that the sooner you get out, the better it's going to be for you, and not just for you, but for the future, for your kids, for your family. And my coordinates are esquiregroup.com or email us at info@esquiregroup.com.
Yeah. And, you know, to that, I would add that, you know, initially people sort of recoil in horror
at the cost of getting out of these things, be they exit taxes or renunciation fees, etc. But these things need to be understood to be legitimate financial investments in your future.
For sure.
At this point, I think that's important as well. Well, this has been a fabulous discussion, as always. And I look forward to picking it up with you next week.
Sounds good, John. Looking forward to it as well.